Good evening and welcome, dear ones. Your presences are each a blessing in our circle of intention and prayer and work, as we come together for a conscious exchange. The light of the candle is reminding us that we can and are enlivened by the light in all three centers of perception, that the light gives context, patterns of beauty. It evokes vibratory patterns, protection, ancestral connection. So in lighting the Christ candle, we are evoking all of these impressions and calling upon the conscious circle of humanity, as well as all conscious beings, to be with us, to join with us. And we place ourselves under the canopy of work. Beginning in prayer, glory be to God transcendent, and to God omnipresent, and to God immanent, as it was in the beginning, is now, and will be forever. Amen. And so we began this evening in celebration once again of one of the teachers who spans this time both the work and the contemplative tradition. And that person is Cynthia Brugeaux. Her birthday is actually March 13th, 1947. What a gift she is to the world. May she live a long and fruitful life. And the following passage comes from her book, Eye of the Heart, which was our community reading last year. And it is a timely passage for our time. There do seem to be some features of this moment that we now find ourselves in that invite us to pay attention in a special way. I have mentioned already how wisdom schools tend to come above ground, either on the cusp of great forward leaps in consciousness or in times of planetary destabilization. And we have seen how our own era qualifies on both accounts. To these markers, I would now like to add another, the one which has really put me on full alert as to likely imaginal intervention. Within my own immediate Christian lineage, it seems that there has been a marked and accelerating exodus of spiritual masters to the other side. And herein she lists a number of them that were important to her and to us from the contemplative Christian tradition. And she goes on, while this is in some sense the inevitable course of things when one finds herself in her 70s, both the rate and the configuration seem a little too pointed to ignore. In imaginal causality, the reason is not hard to spot. Their force is greatly enhanced from there. As long as there are willing hands to join them from this side, the work goes on far more powerfully in this new configuration. Particularly where that work evokes plunging to the heart of the earth, both ecologically, to the place from which Jesus embraced and sanctified the constructural givens of this realm, and metaphorically into the deep structures of the Christian theological imagination, which will need to be systematically reframed on a non-global basis if Christianity is to remain a serious player in the next stage of our collective conscious evolution. And so this displacement towards the more the imaginally embodied side of the conscious circle strikes me fundamentally as a great sign of hope. Important and powerful shifts are indeed about to befall our Mixis Orbis, and in fact already underway. Here on our own flesh and blood end of the stick, the time for daydreaming and demurring is over. All hands are needed on deck. And so we place ourselves among those willing hands to join from this other side, and the work goes on. Amen. A couple of notes for us. The long-awaited return of the movements classes began this past Tuesday evening. And if you signed up to participate but were unable to attend this new beginning, I invite you to please contact Jack Stamps and let him know about your absence as well as your intention about participating. This conscious labor on the part of the movement's leaders is a great labor of love, an exceptional one. For our community, it is their wish and our wish that a conscious container be formed by people who are enlivening all of us, even if we're not present, by the work that they're doing. So absences cause a leak in this container. It is important, if a commitment is made, to adhere to that commitment. And so I invite you to, again, please contact Jack Stamps. Secondly, many of us were blessed 2 weeks ago by Deborah Jean Harding and a poem that she shared with us at the close of our evening on February 24th. And Deborah Jean has graciously shared that poem with us, and you can find it posted in the archives of the Journey School under the notes section of February 24th. Thank you, Deborah Jean, for your being and your presence among us. So now let us prepare ourselves. Bring the fragments of our being from the busy day together so that our being bodies can encompass realms both visible and invisible. And we prepare ourselves in our totality to be present in a place of imminent trust and receptivity to the influences pouring forth from the conscious circle of humanity. With back upright, still, and contained, letting go of all tension and constriction, present, we breathe in deeply. Every most hidden part of our being, all being, everything, everything that passed through us this day, everything that hurt, that confused, that created fear, that left us feeling powerless, less than, more than, everything, everything that uplifted, that loved, that brought joy, all affirming, all denying, And we hold it as offering, reconciled as food for being. We lift it and ask that it all be transubstantiated in our being as whole, as lovely, as radiant, as beloved. We do this on behalf of everyone and everything. And we breathe out this healing light and love into the world, all worlds. I hand over the complexities of the day. I hand over the plans for tomorrow. I hand over the anxieties and small fears of my heart. I yield to the divine human life, the one life. I am here. I am. I wish. I can work. I stand unencumbered before God and one another. Lord, have mercy. And we entered into now the prayer of Lectio Divina. And our reading will be read three times with a silent pause within each reading. You were once darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Live as children of light, for light produces every kind of goodness and righteousness and truth. Everything exposed by the light becomes visible, for everything that becomes visible is light. Therefore it says, "Awake, O sleeper, and arise from the dead, and Christ will give you light." For the creation of something new, with rich and inexhaustible fields of new understanding, where the plague of yourself no longer exists, above imaginary I, with all its false aspects of memories, images, and imagination. Who do I really wish to be? What is my aim? To become a different person. I am to build not on sand, but on rock. For this voluntary suffering and friction, help the inner transformation for which I am in the work. You were once darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Live as children of light, for light produces every kind of goodness and righteousness and truth. Everything exposed by the light becomes visible, for everything that becomes visible is light. Therefore it says, "Awake, O sleeper, and arise from the dead, and Christ will give you light. For the creation of something new, with rich and inexhaustible fields of new understanding, where the plague of yourself no longer exists, above imaginary I, with all its false aspects of memories, images, and imagination. Who do I really wish to be? What is my aim? To become a different person, I am to build not on sand, but on rock. For this, voluntary suffering and friction help the inner transformation for which I am in the work. You were once darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Live as children of light, for light produces every kind of goodness and righteousness and truth. Everything exposed by the light becomes visible, for everything that becomes visible is light. Therefore it says, awake, O sleeper, and arise from the dead, and Christ will give you light. For the creation of something new, with rich and inexhaustible fields of new understanding, where the plague of yourself no longer exists, above imaginary I, with all its false aspects of memories, images, and imagination. Who do I really wish to be? What is my aim? To become a different person, I am to build not on sand, but on rock. For this, voluntary suffering and friction help the inner transformation for which I am in the work. Amen. You are now invited to share with us what you received from this passage and its reading, what was evoked in your heart, what you saw with the eyes of the heart. Marnie, good evening. Welcome.
Hi, everyone. That the very beginning of the passage jumped out for me tonight. I've heard that passage used in my past. You once were darkness and now you're light. It's kind of like a bludgeon, a condemning thing. You were once darkness, shame on you. And tonight I heard it more from the perspective of I was asleep and I was ignorant. And now the light has come on and I have this tremendous responsibility now. And also just that the darkness that I once inhabited was absolutely formatory for who I am now. And I'm so grateful for all that happened because it became the seedbed for what can happen now in my life. Mm-hmm. So I rejoice.
I rejoice. Ah, wonderful. Thank you, Marnie. Rejoice. Victoria, please.
I'm with Marnie on this. And also, I don't know that we need to become a different person. I think the opportunity for me is, and the people that I work with, is to look for what's right and to work with our strengths. And I just feel like suffering comes from resisting what is, or resisting who is. So I struggle with some of it, frankly, because it implies that there's something wrong with us. And we're not perfect, we're human, but I'm just not into the idea of God and perfection and all that hierarchical thinking. I'm not into that. So I think I have some still to learn about this journey that I'm in the journey school. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, Victoria. Thank you. Brett, please.
Yeah. Hi.
Hello.
So good to see you. Sorry.
Yes, likewise, Brett.
Thank you. So I heard this passage differently for the first time. And it was interesting when I caught on to the word darkness. For some reason, I immediately thought of, you know, birthing, you know, coming from darkness and into the world, into the light. Mm-hmm. And the light that we're supposed to take on is, you know, essence, and grow and expand this light. So I didn't see darkness as a negative. I just saw it as a transformation, going from one to another. So it's very beautiful. Thank you.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yes, thank you, Brett. Karen.
Okay, I think I'm on now.
Yes.
Hello, everyone. Hi, Marianne. What I heard a little bit differently is I loved the reading. I thought it was just tremendously enlightening. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as I'm growing in this journey school, I see the phrase "the light" and how I had how I envisioned it this time in the reading is that with a Christ light within me, I am able to see things differently, and I will work for that.
Thank Amen. You. Thank you, Karen. Bonnie.
Good evening, Marianne.
Good evening, Bonnie. Welcome.
I was struck by the image and by the idea of butterflies and the light. As the changes happen in my life, as I am changed internally, I am transformed by the light as the butterfly creates in me a young child, a new child that is innocent and will fly in a beautiful way with Christ guiding my way in my heart and flying free. And I'm feeling that light shining through the image and with the passage. So it's very uplifting. Thank you.
Thank you, Bonnie. Thank you. Anyone else care to share? Rodney, welcome. You're muted, Rodney. There you go.
No. Hi, good to see you.
Yes, yeah, likewise. Good to see you.
Yeah. So, you know, I heard voluntary suffering and friction. And of course, you know, that would be a phrase that I would definitely want to avoid. But what I realized, I guess, during my time in the work, is that this is Jesus on the cross. This is me on the cross, being able to suffer voluntarily without, I mean, basically, if you knew how to suffer, you would not suffer. I mean, and I think I've spent so much time in my life avoiding the discomfort of the issues in the tissues and not actually, you know, being able to embody them. But I think what I've realized is that the more that I can actually feel this friction and be with it, you know, it's transformed. You know, we take these coarse energies of images and childhood injuries and hurts and actually just be with them. And that just by itself, it gives us the ability to change those, you know, those lower hydrogens into higher hydrogens. And I mean, it is a matter of developing, you know, taste mm-hmm. and the ability to feel it. But, you know, these nervous systems that we've been given, they can handle it. It's really not that difficult. You know, there's scale in pain and suffering, you know. Like I was talking in a group tonight, you know, it's not like a sharp stick in the eye. You know, we can take these sensations that occur inside of us that we put so much energy into avoiding, and then realizing how quickly they can dissipate. And then we can actually use, you know, change 48, 96 into 24, maybe even 12, maybe even 6. So, you know, you know, I don't want to invite a bunch of second force, but, you know, it's good to have these things, and it's good to be able to know that they are there for our own transformation.
Indeed. Thank you. Thank you very much, Robert Brotney. And Frank, if you would kindly be brief, we'll close this part with you. Thank you.
I will be. I was struck by the line in the readings that it reminds me what I'm here for. That all of that together points in a direction that we are trying to head. And anything that points in that direction, I'm for, even if it's intentional suffering and, you know, labor. But thank you.
Thank you, Frank. Thank you. Much to ponder here, much. Thank you to everyone. And once again, I am delighted to welcome Beverly McCune with us this evening. And she will continue to accompany us on our journey into and with the time body. Welcome, Beverly.
Thanks, Marianne. Hi, everybody. It sounds like our exploration this week was pretty rich for people, so I'm going to share my screen so we can start right on that. So this week, we were to look at our ancestry, our lineage, and ask ourselves what were some of the beliefs, attitudes, prejudices, the thoughts that we got from our parents or other early childhood important people in our lives, and to engage all three centers, to celebrate the positive, and to question the no longer useful. We were also invited to engage scathing self-honesty, a phrase of Bernadette Roberts, to engage an examine exercise to see if there's any mythic membership consciousness that still resides within us, and possibly to make this a Lenten aim. And then there was a video from Beelzebub's tales to his grandson, his son, and we were to see, watch that and to see what was evoked. And of course, it was our March practice of eating slowly for this week. So I'm interested to hear from all of you, what was your experience from this? So who would like to share? Oop, there you are, Jackie.
Good evening, I'm Beverly. I was so delighted at the beginning of this calendar year to find out that we were going to be looking at time body, because I really know that I am at 20 years into the work. This is when I really am working on my time body. And it's taken me 20 years really to have the courage to do this work. I've always been attracted to it. Living Time, Dr. Nichols' book, was my favorite outside book from the commentaries, which takes up time body and other issues related to this fascinating idea of time as a circle in particular. But what I know as a body person, which is my personality type, the issues are in the tissues. And for me at this stage of my life to be able, with scathing self-honesty and courage, to go back to particular moments in my past and try to remember them as accurately as I can, knowing that memory is never very good. But the issues are still in the tissues, and actually the memory in the tissues is more genuine, as I'm discovering, than my intellectual memories are of events in the past. So last week, I thought the image, the two trees entwined, was just absolutely fabulous. And the Luke passage from the Message is much kinder than I've always read this passage in most of the versions of the Bible, which I understood usually to be, anyone who comes to me but doesn't hate their mother and father can't be my disciples, which I always thought was terribly harsh. But what I'm recognizing is, as a work principle, it is, if you can't let go of your accounts, you really can't be a disciple of Christ. And so I have really enjoyed this week looking at my lineage and my ancestry, and was really impressed, Beverly, with your photographic outlay of all of your family. So I pulled some photographs together, and I realized that there was a time when it was too painful for me to go back and look at my family structure. I was actually coming in reverse on this Luke passage. As a child, I resented my parents. I had accounts. I didn't know that's what they were, but I had accounts against both of my parents, particularly because their spiritual backgrounds were completely the opposite of each other and brought me huge shame as a child growing up in Texas, where if you didn't look like everybody else and you weren't a Christian, you were a no-no. My dad was an East Coast Jew and my mom was Southern Baptist, and they were both doctors and free spirits, and we didn't look like anybody else. And I wanted to look like everybody else. So I had always, from the beginning, an account. And it took me up to really the age of almost 50 and coming to the Church of Conscious Harmony and that lineage to begin the work to be able to dismantle those accounts. And it's a slow process. I love my parents. I loved them then, but I did have those accounts and that stood in my way. But now I have gone through years of forgiveness work with the help of the work. And I recognize that what they did is they came into a marriage from two completely opposite mythic membership streams. It's like I always saw it as two streams or rivers coming together, not trees entwined, but two completely separate rivers. But they came to create a family that wasn't bound up in spiritual mythic membership. And so we had no spiritual life. And I had no courage to ask for some form of spiritual life, though I had a huge yearning for it. And it wasn't until I got to the Church of Conscious Harmony when I could actually work with that and come under a lot of laws in the discipline that we had in the old school to actually do this work. And it's been life-changing for me. But what I did this week is I went to the index and looked up every time body commentary, wrote them all down, and I'm making my way through them strictly as time body studies. And in volume 3, it talks about the importance of dealing with accounts to enable yourself to actually work on time body. And it says, this is at 952, if I work on myself now, observe myself, see where I am identified, see what accounts I am making against others, how I justify myself and forgive no one, how I think only how others are wrong, how I judge people mechanically without seeing into their lives or seeing how self-satisfied and complacent I am. Now, I am not at all what I imagine. In fact, if I begin to work on myself from the esoteric ideas of this work, which seek to transform us, then I may be able to change my time body by getting on to another level of time. So that is my wish, and that is my aim. And I am just really delighted that that I am here and that I have the support of this immediate lineage to do this work.
Yes. Thank you, Jackie. Thank you. It's amazing how long it can take for certain aspects of the work to come around, but it's all perfect, right? It's all perfect. It all led you here. So thank you. And your work serves us so much. Thank you. Tamara, please.
So I've really enjoyed this exercise this week. The first thing I really appreciated was when I looked back at my ancestors and I thought how much love and intention and wish they put into the next generation and then the next generation. And so you've got parents from, you know, generations back, ancestors from generations back who had a wish for their children. And then their children had a wish for their children. And it's just kind of a beautiful thing. You know, Thich Nhat Hanh says that we're made up of our ancestors. And so I just love that because, you know, if you think about how many generations back of love and intention and wish that our ancestors have given us. It's really kind of mind blowing, really. And I never really thought about it until now. So it is kind of, you know, Morton and I were kind of joking about how it's kind of like it gives you some sort of like you need to do something important because they've just bundled all this love and intention and wish for you in your life. But, you know, it's just a beautiful thing. And it makes me it gives me joy to think about that. And then the second thing that I got out was the mythic membership. And I realized how many times I've been part of a mythic membership, and it's like it blows my mind. You know, it's like growing up, whether it was college or family or you know, religious organizations or you know, you name it, it was just always seems like there was something. And you know, I was asleep a lot of those times, I would just become part of this group, and groupthink, you know, is what I think about is, so I kind of just did whatever, you know, the mythic membership, you know, thought I should do, is just kind of like what I took on. So anyways, it's just interesting to think about that and to ponder it. So it was a lot, I found it really interesting. Thank you.
Good. Yeah, I mean, it is beautiful to think about our ancestors. Our culture doesn't do that a lot, you know, not like the Native American cultures or other more ancient cultures who really honor their ancestors. And so it is, it, you know, to take time to appreciate that, what we received, what we didn't receive. You know, what we didn't receive was motivation for us to be here, you know, so it all served. And so we can honor them that way for sure. Thank you. Thank you. Bob, please.
Well, the homework helped me get motivated to pull out that book of genealogy that a member of the family put together 30 years ago. And I was delighted to see that my family went back to Switzerland and Germany. And during the Reformation, they were part of the Anabaptist group and broke away from the church. They, I think, originally, as I can figure, originally became Mennonite, which then kind of morphed into Brethren of Christ, finally, when they got to America. And they got to America in the early 1700s. And my grandmother, who lived to be 102, came with her family from Pennsylvania to Kansas, along with other families. Anyway, it was just really a marvelous trip, and so much appreciation for this line, as Tamara was saying, of people who gave a flip, who cared, and particularly in terms of the religious faithfulness that folks had committed to. I mean, these folks back in Europe, where they were put in prison, and they were really hassled because they were not following the state religion or the Catholic faith. I don't know, just really very courageous and wonderful people, no doubt. I looked at some of the traits that I learned from my family. Clearly, I consider myself a good householder, and that's because that was modeled for me, mm-hmm. very clearly.
Yes.
Of course, you couldn't be angry in my family, so I never learned how to do that. So yeah. Anyway, it was really marvelous experience. Thank you.
Thank you. I like you brought both the horizontal lineage and the vertical in there, because you could see that in your background. That's really beautiful. A lot of us don't necessarily see that. So thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Who else? We have some more time. Oh, I saw Bonnie there. There she is. Bonnie, please.
Wow, sharing twice in one night.
You go, girl.
Thank you. I'll try. I have done a lot of work with ancestry, but not in this sense. And I really delved into things like the mythic membership. And like Jackie, I did hold accounts against my parents, as maybe some other children do. And I was the miracle baby, the one that came that wasn't supposed to after difficult times. But I couldn't play with certain kids in the neighborhood. I couldn't do things that others wanted that I wanted to do, because my parents and hence me held certain mythic beliefs that we didn't associate.
Yes.
And that kind of extended. And in our town, we had and two rather recent times, one side of the river was one ethnic group and one side of the river was another, and never the twain should meet. And I have grown a lot with that and have worked with people from a lot of different backgrounds and in my teaching and in my life. And I found that the mythic memberships were just that, they were mythic. And I felt them dissipating somewhat. And on the other flip side of the question, the other question about my parents, a long time ago, when I was asked the question of Church of Conscious Harmony, why I came to Harmony, it was because of my heart. And my heart with this came from, I believe, my grandmother. Mm-hmm. And my grandmother was a very harsh, hard woman, but she had gone through a lot of difficult times. I have their diaries. I have my parents' diaries of 72 years of marriage. And I read about my grandmother and the things that she actually did. And I have sensory memories of her making cookies with me. I can smell the cookies, and sitting with me on her lap. And some of the harsh things, the hard things of, oh, I didn't want to go down to grandma's house again this weekend, and rah, 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 kind of dissipated. And I'm seeing them in a different way. And it's kind of a beautiful feeling, and looking at people in a new way. So I'm taking a hard look at myself and how I'm changing. And I think my heart came from my grandmother on the vertical scale. And she was drawing me closer and closer to come to Harmony. So that's what some of my research was. Yeah. And it will continue.
Thank you. That's beautiful. That's time body work. You change your attitude towards Zen, that shifts everything. It goes back to them because you're seeing them different. They change. You know, it's really wonderful. Thank you, Bonnie. Thank you. Must be Jack this time.
Nice guess. So about 2 years before my mother passed, she called the children in, and I went on my appointed day, and she had a number of books and things that she wanted to give. And I snatched this thing up. It's her mother's Schofield edition of the Bible. Mm-hmm. And it has, they were Baptist, and it has all these pages where she listed their own matrimony, the marriage of her children, my mother, and even the births of their kids. I'm in this book. And they were Baptist. And I remember going to the Baptist church with them as a young teen. And they it was raucous. They were singing these songs with the hymns were on a projected screen, and a ball was bouncing on the words. And it was just like, it was like, almost felt like pandemonium to me. So when I came to the church and I learned to quiet down, I did have this kind of unusual account about them for that, because of my new enlightenment. But when I was thumbing through this Bible, I came upon this. It was in a bookmark, and it was from a Baptist newsletter from the church. And she had cut this out. It said, "Quietness, be still and know that I am God. Mm-hmm. That I who made and gave this life will lead thy faltering steps aright. That I who seek the sparrows fall will hear and heed the earnest call, I am God. And I went, Jack, you don't know much. You got a lot to learn. And it was a beautiful part of my history, my family, that I had, similar to Jackie, had kind of discarded and came across a nugget that she had cut out probably 70 years ago.
Wow. That's wonderful. Yeah. Isn't it beautiful to see things in a new way? And know what we don't know. Thank you, Jack. Deborah Jean.
Hi, everybody.
Hey.
I got two things from really looking at this. There was so much to do this week. There was so much richness in these lessons are fantastic. But I really could see that. The things that I didn't get that I longed for as a kid, which was, I came from a lot of free thinkers. Some of them really liked the alcohol too. And the other ones were sort of free thinkers, academic, bits, kind of snobby, looking down at other people. And I always sort of longed for, you know, us all going to church. But what I realized was that, I really got this amazing gift to be allowed to go to God and explore God. So what I didn't get was sort of this formal religious training, but what I did get was space to find God in many different ways. Yes. And which changed over the years and evolved and became very different. I went through lots of different phases of religious exploration. And so they never stopped me from a lot of things. There just wasn't this formal thing that I kind of craved, wanting the family that all went to church and looked at a little bit more, leave it to beavery, you know, kind of thing, right? And so I realized that that was true with everything, that things that I didn't get sort of manifested in really positive other experiences, you know, that drew another direction. And so maybe some of our more, as you call them, horizontal wishes are those things, like you had said, Beverly, that lead to spiritual growth that really do give us an opening in another way. The other thing I could see was there was a lot of abuse in my family. My mother once said that if she had had us now, that we would have been taken away from her, which is probably true. There was a tremendous amount of abuse from all three of my parents. And that it took me, you know, a lot of years of being in therapy, but what really finally hit me, and it was about the time that I met Cynthia and started centering prayer. And I was so glad we celebrated her birthday. Thank you for doing that, Marianne. That I began to realize that I could, that I needed to look at my mother, my father, my stepfather as people, not to get the personal connection out, that I was an adult now with my life, and that they were not always my parents, and they were people aside from being my parents. It's just sort of that narcissistic little kid thing that I'm still the center of the universe somehow, and all things revolve around me. And it was then that I could see my parents as these wounded people, as my mother, as someone who had no support from husbands, way too many kids, her frustrations and her, she also had a brain injury at birth that made it very hard for her to organize things. And that the anger and rage she felt towards her kids was probably much more exhaustion and just overwhelm than it was about not loving us or anything else. And that was the most freeing thing for me in the work I did with my parents, was stepping back from they're my parents and imprisoning them in this little picture.
Yes.
And letting them be the people that God created rather than my little creation of them and the wholeness of their life. And what an amazing, astonishing shift of consciousness and love. I have had so many conversations with my mother this past year, and so many times I have told her in my little time travel that I've done with her how sorry I am that I didn't understand while she was here of what her life was like. It was only from my perspective and not from understanding what it must have been like for her to be a woman without choices and to see a daughter who had lots of choices. And she was proud of me, but what did that do to her inside? And so it was just getting out of that personal, it's all about me, and being able to externally consider my parents as the people they were. So what a blessing. And that really came with starting the work. I'm very aware of that. Thank you for letting me share. Yes,
thank you. Thank you. Yeah, boy, talk about changing your time body. You can see more of a reality and that movement to external considering. Thank you so much. And that's just a perfect segue into our topic for this evening, which is memories, images, and imagination. We heard a lot of memories tonight. We heard about images. And so, let's just dive right in because this is really a wonderful topic. And it's such a good one to follow on from last week. So I'm just going to move through this pretty quickly. What are memories? Okay, we know that they're impressions that are stored in our body mind, right? Our body, our mind, our emotional body. They're past, they're from our past. That's what memories are. We can see that they're made up of images, they have feelings, emotions, sensations, and they have interpretations from associations. And all these combine to create a story around an event. It's not just the event that happened, it's all these other things that wrap around this image or movie of an event in our lives. Memories can be triggered by different things. Smells, someone mentioned smells of baking cookies. I think that was Bonnie. We can be taken back by sounds or even feelings that arise. I was walking yesterday and I was listening to the birds, and all of a sudden this memory of being on retreat at Cedar Break came back. There's the birds at Cedar Break. And then an imagination of the future, because I'm going on the Lenten retreat next week. So there was imagination too in that. So all those things of the senses can trigger memories. Our memories most likely change over time. They can become more vague. They can become more intense. They can be elaborated on. Or we can see more truth in them, like several of you witnessed to. And some of them can be very intense and they recur. So the intensity and the recurrence really depends on the degree of digestion. And that's not physical digestion. That is how we've digested the impressions that have come to us in life. If we were little, which were many of the stressful impressions come in, we don't have the tools to deal with that. We can't take it in and digest it. So it gets stuck as energy in our body, in our emotional body. We feel that. And so every time that arises, it's an opportunity. It's an opportunity to share, to release that. And then images are visual impressions. That's it. You know, they're just this visual impression, not with all the other things like a memory has, but they can very easily trigger associations, emotions, sensations. They're definitely a key component of imagination. I mean, the words are very similar. they represent different influences. If you think of an image of, say, Christ on the cross versus an image from the war in the Ukraine, very different qualities and representations. Images can also reveal reality if we can see them objectively. And then imagination, there's two out of several definitions that I found interesting. So one, the act or power of forming a mental image of something not present to the senses, so not right in front of us now, or never before wholly perceived in reality. And then on the other hand, fanciful or, oh, what's that other one? Fanciful or empty assumption. I thought that was very interesting. Assumption. There's assuming in imaginations. We also often say there's no second force in imagination. But both of these point to what the work calls right and wrong use of imagination. So right use of imagination, we are using directed attention, or at least attracted attention, the inner parts of our centers, the inner parts of the intellectual center for creation. So for instance, an engineer has to imagine something that he needs to create and put down on paper in order for it to manifest. Also, artists do that. We can do that if we're going to build something. Lots of people use imagination in the right way when they're doing creation. Also in the work, when we create a future memory, that's where we say we're going to see family, and we've observed that every time we go home, we turn back into a 13-year-old, and just all that stuff gets triggered. We send a memory forward of it being of an outcome that we would wish for. So it's another word would be visualization. Dr. Nickel actually talks about visualizing as being very important because images are also the language of the emotional center. And so that speaks to us at a deeper level and engages the emotional center. Wrong use of imagination, such as daydreaming, mechanical curiosity, imagined outcomes, those are all parts of the outer parts. They reside in the outer parts of centers when we're mechanical. We're not awake. We're asleep going through life. So, you know, just images and just thinking about things just randomly, stream of consciousness kind of thing. Although I did see an article that said that daydreaming is a really important function for the brain. So I don't know, but I put it down there anyway, as part of being kind of on the mechanical side. Mechanical curiosity about people you're wondering about. I wonder what she's doing. You know, you see that in the media, People Magazine, entertainment. And imagined outcomes, positive or negative. All right, this personality, when it's in fear, goes to these horrible worst case scenarios, just terrible. I scare myself to death. It's really amazing. You're sitting there and you have a vacation coming, right? And you're imagining how amazing it's going to be. And, oh, we're just going to have the best time. And well, most of us have seen it. That's just a setup for suffering, useless suffering, right? And also all of those things, wrong use of imagination, we are totally out of the present moment. Right. So imagination and images are part of memories. And so in the next few weeks, we're going to actually be working with trauma. Dr. Christine O'Brien is going to be back. So this is kind of a good dive into that or start. So, you know, how do we work with memories? Oh, oops, pardon me. Ah, almost I forgot this one. Another very important idea in the work and related to imagination is the idea of imaginary I. Before we really delve into the work, we really see ourselves as one unchanging I. We're consistent, you know, yeah, we got some moods, but we just see us as a unity. Whereas the work talks about that we're a multiplicity. We are legion. We have many, many eyes in us. And so that you can see how that imaginary I can play into imagination, images, and memory as well. It influences all of those. So anyway, how do we do time body work with memories? And this, certainly we've heard wonderful memories. We've seen how people, how Deborah and Bonnie, I think, were changing how they could see their parents or their families. We've done that too. So we're looking, and though it's good to look at how can we work with memories that are difficult or stressful. So these are just, you know, a couple of ways that we can. Practice the basics. When they arise, you practice the basics: self-observation, non-identification, and self-remembering. And within that, another practice we've talked about many times is you turn the attention to your body, feeling it. You know, that was talked about. Someone talked about, we just haven't felt all those things. Jackie was talking about that. We haven't felt all the stuff that's stored in these memories, that's stored in these bodies, the issues in the tissues, right? This is how we do it. You have to get out of the head. You go into the body, you turn your attention to the sensations, the sensations that come along with the feelings. Teacher and author Michael Singer, he talks about how a practice of relax and release, where you, when you feel something arising like that, you relax the body, you relax back, and he says, relax into the seat of self, which is an interesting image for me. I'm not exactly sure what that means, but I feel that. As soon as I relax the body, it's like relaxing back and all of that sensation and all that's there. You're allowing it to be there. And he uses a term of samskara, which is a Hindu term, but I would say it's these stored wounds we have in ourselves. By relaxing back, allowing it to be there, it gives the space for that memory, that energy to release all of that, that energy to finally release, or at least partially. I found that very interesting. Welcoming prayer is very, very similar, and it's a beautiful Christian practice for welcoming the divine presence in this work that we're doing, realizing we're not alone in it at all. And then, of course, my favorite, which is Byron Katie's method of self-inquiry, where we take a memory and we formulate a thought that it's related to it, and we question it and the other two practices are incorporated into that. So I'm going to stop there before we go. Boy, I am having problems with my thing today. Okay, there we go. are there any questions or comments at this point before we move forward? Yes, Lisa.
Hi, can you hear me?
Hi.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for asking if we have any questions, because I do, specifically around the right use of imagination.
Mm-hmm.
Because this came up for me last year too, and I still don't understand the difference between wrong use and right use of imagination. Because what I wrote down just now was right use of imagination can be in creating, and it can also be in future memory or visualizing. Mm-hmm. And then I heard you talk about the wrong use and daydreaming, which I think daydreaming is wonderful. And to me, it's like a meditation. So,
mm-hmm.
But imaginal outcomes, positive or negative. And you talked about being on vacation. So I was wondering if you could talk about that a little bit, because I just go back and forth all the time, because for me, if I have trepidation about a vacation, or I don't think it's a good idea about where I'm going, or, I mean, an example is my husband has this amazing diet right now where he has to eat 7 times a day.
Mm-hmm.
And I do most of the cooking. So the thought of going on vacation together is like, okay, that is not a vacation for me. But mm-hmm. because I imagine in a negative way how exhausting it's going to be for me versus visualizing how can I create this, you know, how can I make it look, how can I have a future memory of him helping with the cooking or preparing meals and enjoying it on a sunset, you know, with the sunset. So for me, it's actually, am I making sense here? It's like, it's a fine line to me of visualizing yeah. an experience for a vacation that creates possibility and maybe being disappointed. I don't know. It's just, it's an example.
Mm-hmm. No, well, I think what's key is looking at the attention that's being used in either one. If you're visualizing a good outcome for your vacation, I mean, to me, that is kind of a future memory, but it's not like you're imagining like wistfully. Just without what I heard in what you're saying is that you're calculating second force, the second force that could be there, because you know what it's like at home to do that. And then you're thinking, okay, when we go there or wherever to you know that there could be some challenges. And so the thing is that you're not just asleep in that imagination. See, I don't hear it as imagination. I hear it much more as visualization. So to me, if you can see how much attention you're using, if you're using it directed, or if it's just kind of coming in and going out, you know, I'm sure you know the experience of stuff coming in and going out, and your mind just kind of goes, and you're all of a sudden you wake up and go, oh, I was thinking about that thing. You know, for me, the imagining negative outcomes, that for me, it creates useless suffering. So that's the other thing you might look at is how does what you're doing make you feel? You know, that might be also although I suppose positive fantasizing could make you feel real good too. But I think it's for how high a purpose are you using that imagination for? You know, are you trying to control maybe motivation? Looking at motivation too might give you a clue. I don't know if that helps at all, mm-hmm. but it probably confused you even more.
Voicing it, you know, because it's been one of those questions I've had that I just didn't want to ask. So here mm-hmm. again, so I think just processing it and talking about it in that context is helpful. Just
yeah.
understanding what you said about, you know, intention and motivation and yes. how it makes me feel when I'm having the thoughts.
Right. Right.
Good chance to self-observe and not.
Yeah. So yes.
Thank you.
Exactly. Yeah, thank you, Lisa. Good question. And Pam, please.
I don't know if this will be helpful to Lisa or not, but I used future memory a lot in the last years of my dad's life. he was a long way away. I could only get up there maybe twice a year, and he was suffering from dementia. So every time before I did a trip, I set a future memory, and it was very basic. It was that all of us, he and his wife and I, at the end of the trip, would just feel that it was a really good trip, that we really enjoyed each other, and that we're so glad we were together. That was it. It was just that sort of general visualization. I didn't think about, you know, gosh, I hope that, you know, lunches aren't a disaster and that my flight isn't delayed, or, you know, I didn't think about very specific things at all, because I think that's when you get into a sticky area of outcomes. But it was more just that overall feeling that we would all be enriched.
Yes.
I don't know how they felt, but that's how I felt at the end of each of those visits. So future memory was really helpful to me. And I've used it in other situations too, but that's the one that comes to mind for me.
Right. And in that, you're visualizing it in images and also feeling what it would feel like as well. So yeah, it has a couple of elements to it,
other than
just this image that's kind of spinning out. Yeah. Thank you, Pam. Thank you. That's very helpful. Elena, Chris, or I'm not sure who's there.
Yeah, I'm going to ask the question. Actually, it was more of a comment that you were saying. Earlier, you were talking about Mike Singer, and he explained kind of like being in the seat of self and without reacting to the emotion. And I guess, I just wanted to point out, because it's kind of hard to understand, like, being in the seat of self kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I heard it from Rupert Spira. I think he talks a little bit the same. He's also a spiritual teacher. And he says the way that you experience the self is by kind of like relaxing your focus in some way. So instead of like focusing on something specific, you just kind of like relax your focus. You know, you're not really focused on anything specific. And so once you relax your focus, then like the self kind of like appears. And that was really helpful for me, because with Michael Singer, he wasn't very specific about it. Mm-hmm. But so he has, Rupert Spira talks about that being like, he has two teachings. One is relaxing the focus and kind of experiencing the self. But then he has the other yoga, what he calls yoga meditations, where you go directly to the emotion, you know, and you like completely feel your emotion.
Yes.
So I thought that those two approaches are good, because one, whenever you're relaxing, you know, you're relaxing your focus and you're experiencing the self, you have kind of like a direct experience to the oneness, you know, to the awareness, to the self. Mm-hmm. And then the other approach is, because some people could say, well, maybe that's a little bit bypassing in some way, you know, because you are having their direct experience with the self, but you're not really going to the tissue of the emotion.
Right.
So I like the two approaches, that, you know, you are kind of having that experience of awareness, but then also doing the meditation of like going directly to the emotion itself. So
yes,
I wanted to share that.
Yeah, thank you. There are so many ways out there. Isn't it amazing that they're so available to us now, and that they come when we need them. So thank you very much for clarifying that. That's helpful for sure. Okay. Well, let's see. Boy. Well, I had wanted actually to take us through some self-inquiry, but apparently that's not supposed to happen tonight. but I will share just to, there is a slide here on the Byron Katie's form of self-inquiry, the four questions and turnarounds. We've gone over this before, but you know, maybe just right in this moment, what you can do, we can do it very quickly, is, I mean, this will be on the in the archive, but what you could do just right now is, you know, there we have some memories flying around in our minds right now. You know, find a stressful memory in the moment, you know, and see if you can formulate a thought around that, you know, a specific stressful memory. And it doesn't have to be from your far past. It can be from having heard a snippet of the news. You know, we're all feeling the collective fear that's out there, right? You know, so what would a thought be that we were holding around that, perhaps against a certain leader of a certain country? You know, this person is crazy, or war shouldn't happen. Any of these kind of stressful beliefs, or one I had was my mother didn't let me be angry. You know, so maybe just find one and then just ask yourself, is it true? You know, is it true? And you can see all the proof that you have in your mind, in your memory, in your time body for it. Is it true? Yes or no? And it's okay. You know, yes is okay, no is okay. And with this method, if you have a yes, you go on to question two. If you have a no, you go on to question three. But question two is, can you absolutely know it's true? This thought, for me, my mother wouldn't let me be angry. Is that really true? Can I absolutely know that that's true, that she wouldn't let me be angry? And you sit with your answer. And the thing about self-inquiry is it's a meditative process. We tend to think through it, especially if we do it fast like this. But really, it works so beautifully when you're meditating in a specific moment in time. So the next step is, you know, what happens? You do your self-observation in your time body on a specific memory, you know, the emotions that come up around it, the thoughts, the images, other memories that arise with it, past images. There might be future images. They'll never change. You know, I'll never overcome this, whatever. It's scathing self-honesty too. You're being observer here, an objective observer of this moment in time. How did I treat the other person in this situation, if there is another person? Or how did I treat myself? You know, am I seeing myself as better, worse, the other person? Yeah. What do I get to hold on to with this belief? And then just, you know, we can in a minute here, just who would I be without that story? All of that goes away. Who would I be in that moment of time without that story? And so that's the kind of thing that Deborah Jean witnessed to us without her story about her parents. She was able to externally consider them. And then there's a whole process of what Katie calls turnarounds, which is really a wonderful part of the process, because she also calls them living turnarounds, because when you turn around something like, my mother wouldn't let me be angry, it's, I wouldn't let me be angry, which is just as true, that was truer. I wouldn't let her be angry in my mind. I never considered her. You know, if you go deep enough in question three with what happens, if you really observe what happens in yourself, the turnarounds don't feel harsh. They're like, oh, wow. They're very enlightening. I didn't let my mother be angry, would be another turnaround. Anyway, you go to Katie's website, thework.com. You can read all about it, or if you're more interested in more, you can also contact me. And just very quickly, the homework. There's a beautiful reflection from John Fuchs from 40 Years After Gurdjieff there, because what we want to keep in front of us in all of this work is our aim. And that beautiful reading from Cynthia Bourgeau about connecting with the imaginal realm and those on the other side. That's what we really want. So, and then this week to focus our self-observation on this topic of images, imagination, and memories, and to take one of the practices that's listed there and apply it, or another of your choosing that would be related. So thank you all for engaging with this, and blessings on all of our work this week. Thank you, Marianne.
Thank you, Beverly. There is much to ponder and to work with there. So let us close with a reflection from Rodney Collin on the matter of time. Everyone has three kinds of time: one's own, that of nature, and that of the sun. We are to check our clocks by the time of the sun. Conscience means relating our time to the other two times of nature, that is, the world in which we live and our neighbors, and of the sun, that is God. Time exists only on this physical level, and when we have reached being, there is neither past nor future. There is only being. When we are every minute. Let us join together in praying aloud, as we are, the prayer of God's love. God's love has always met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully. And how blessed I am to simply remember God. Protect us, Lord, while we are awake, and watch over us as we sleep, that awake we may keep watch with Christ, and asleep rest in Christ's peace. Amen.